Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, S.B. Roz. S.B. Roz is a coach for people who sense that the work of positive world change, whatever that means to each individual, starts inside, in the messy inner humanness, with one's relationship with themselves. In her 11 years of coaching, this has looked like everything from exploring strategies to cope with procrastination, to co-creating pathways down which folks find more of themselves and more to appreciate, even love, about themselves. Along the way, clients have made career changes, started or grown businesses, and improved relationships with folks in all their various circles. SB, or you can call her Roz if you prefer, is a lifelong tinkerer. Among her current projects are the Substack Death Plus Stuff, weekly silent gatherings called Grief Nooks, her interactive zines at Humaning, and whatever she happens to make from her seasonal farm share. With that, SB, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm excited to have you as a guest contributor today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave. I'm so excited to get to have this conversation with you. This is just a delight.
And I'm always a firm believer that nobody meets each other by chance. I threw coincidence out of my vocabulary a long time ago. And I have to give some props to Diana Wisga, who tagged both of us on LinkedIn, and they thought it might be good if we had a conversation. So we connected, and now we find ourselves here on a podcast. So me too. And Diana is a really adept at bringing the right people together. And anytime she refers somebody to me, I look at that as, that's a no-brainer that they're going to be considered for the podcast and be a guest on the podcast, because her judgment is so spot on and her intuition is so spot on. So Diana, if you're listening, thank you for bringing me and us be together. So
I second that. She's so generous in that way.
Yes, she is. And she has the philosophy that we're all in this together, and we are. I mean, there isn't any competition in what we do. It's a matter of how can we pool our collective strengths so that for the collective good. She tends to bring people together who have that same goal in mind. But anyway, my first question for you is, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
I love this question, and I had a lot of fun thinking about it. And it's certainly a question I use. And part of what I love about this question is it's really an invitation to be imaginative, because it's as though we're imagining what our life would have been had we not had certain experiences. Right, which I am I'm a firm believer, that we're sort of, we clearly are surrounded by opportunity and possibility all the time, right? Yeah. And so we can get really existential about it. We can get really creative about it. What if I hadn't stopped at that coffee shop one day and my timeline had shifted a little bit and then I would have met different people or had different experiences and who would I be today, right? Yeah, so I find that sort of endlessly fun to think about. But, your mention of Diane Wisga really gets me thinking about another thing that I find really important, which is that opportunity, I think, inevitably comes in the form of other humans. And that certainly has played out in my life where, for example, I had run a number of businesses before somebody randomly said, you need to meet these four people. And one of them happened to be an executive coach. And she said, you're a coach. Why aren't you coaching? Kathy Baskey-Young is her name. And she and I had that conversation for 2 years before I decided to become a coach. And I did that. And I could tell a thousand stories of people that I ran into and who said a little thing or a big thing or opened a door for me or even closed a door for me, right, in ways that shifted my path. When I drill into what has led me to be thinking a lot more about death and grief and the realities of being a mortal, right, creature, as right all living things are, that feels a lot murkier to me. It feels like I could tell stories about it, right? I could tell a story about being 19 and being in the room with a number of family members while my maternal grandfather transitioned out of this life and how shocking that was to me, right? Here's this person who I know and love so well, right? And he's there and then he's not there, mm-hmm. but he's still there, right? And it was, for me, a terrible experience for a long time until I could process it enough to see it as a beautiful experience. And ever since then, I've never missed an opportunity. If there's an opportunity to be with a cat or a dog or a human in transition, like I want to be there, mm-hmm. you know, and I want to be able to hold that space with them and for them in that final moment. And I want to witness that really magical and mysterious transition from this life into the great mystery, whatever that is.
Those punctuate the way, but I, you know, to say that those are why I got to this place where I have death and stuff and I'm, you know, collaborating on these grief nooks and steering the big ship of my business toward embracing the realities of mortality as perhaps the most important context for defining our lives and how we show up in them. Right. Who knows?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe I brought it with me from a previous lifetime. I don't know how the big mystery works.
I don't think any of us does, but rather than try to solve the mystery, we just need to honor the mystery. And because, I mean, there's questions that we have about life and death in this lifetime that are not going to be answered. I believe they'll be answered once we transition to our next existence, or as I like to call it, dance in another dimension. And I love that you use the word transition, because that's how I've learned to see death. Is a transition from the physical body into the spiritual plane. And I've used that term quite a bit. Although I tell my students that I teach at Utica University, work with the vocabulary of death that individuals are comfortable with. If it's passing away, use that until you establish a relationship, and then you might be able to suggest some other ways to look at it once they're ready to hear it. So I love that you use the word transition. It's close to my heart, and the mystery as well too, and the great mystery. Those are terms that I've come to align with as well. So, well, thank you for that. That's quite a journey, and we never know who's going to cross our paths at any particular time. But the fact that you were introduced to a very transformative executive coach set you on the path and got you to explore some other areas. And I'm sure has allowed you to do some meaningful work with others as well, too. Which segues into my next question about SB Roz Coaching. What is the mission of SB Roz Coaching? And can you give our listeners an idea of the type of presenting problems or the presenting issues that your clients bring with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my core values, as you alluded to as you read my biography or my little blurb, one of my core values is just making positive world change, whatever that means. So I was raised Jewish, and we have an idea called Tikkun Olam, and it means a lot of things. But what it means to me personally, it really boils down to that we each have individual responsibility and capability to make the world a better place. And so I've done a lot of things in my life trying to figure out how to be a good contributor, right? How to be a positive force of good, of change in the world. And what I have found is that while I have a few options there, that I try to exercise all of them or as many as possible, that coaching is really where I'm shiniest. It's really where I'm strongest in my skill set. And so my personal mission in my coaching is that I help
people liberate themselves from what keeps them from making their positive world change. And that as I help people liberate themselves from their own internal obstacles, then they're out there making their impact, right? Which inevitably ripples out, right? It's the old butterfly flapping its wings, right? Or dropping a pebble into a still pond, right? Y'all can't help but have a radiant impact. And so that's my personal mission. Now, I don't necessarily say that to my clients because it's not relevant to them, right? What's relevant to them is that they see themselves more fully and they see how they're getting in their own way and strategies for doing less of that. We'll never stop doing it as humans, I don't think, but we can do less of it. And also where they're really powerful and impactful and perhaps not giving themselves credit, which I find happens a whole lot as well. And so in that way, I consider myself a full-length mirror for the spiritual and emotional and intellectual self, right? We can't see our whole bodies without a full-length mirror, and I don't think we can see our internal landscapes without the reflection of another human. What people come in to see me about tends to be somewhere along the lines of feeling unfulfilled at work, feeling anxious generally, feeling like they have something to give and they don't know what it is or how to get to it. Right. So there's often just sort of some version of a stuck feeling. Mm-hmm. Right. And they go, well, maybe you can help me get unstuck. One of my favorite themes that I've noticed in my clients is that I'm a little bit of an outlier in a lot of ways. And I work with a lot of people who are very much mainstream. And they'll, you know, I get a lot of messages that are something along the lines of, you look really outside of my norm. Maybe that's what I need.
Yeah, it'd be a dull world. It'd be a dull world if everybody was the same or acted the same or you know, had the same beliefs. And I like the outliers. Those are the ones that are the rule breakers. They defy conventional wisdom, and I think conventional wisdom is highly overrated anyway. So, I mean, outliers are welcome in my social circle anytime, and I have a few of those. And they have influenced me, and they have inspired me, and you know, and I've been able to incorporate a lot of what their beliefs are into my own system, my own belief system. So, yeah, I like outliers. So you're good.
I'm with you. And you know, it's a contextual thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's what's conventional wisdom for us and how we find people who challenge us. You know, immediately comes to mind one of my dearest friends, a man named Mike Childress, and we just could not be more different. We have different spiritual perspectives, we have different political perspectives, we've lived very different lives, and we meet on the grounds of mutual respect. Mm-hmm. And from those grounds, we just had this incredibly powerful friendship that's deeply supportive and occasionally very challenging in important and beautiful ways. And I think we each help one another see a broader perspective of life and ourselves. It really is quite a gift to get somebody like that in our lives.
And just because we have different views politically or ideologically doesn't mean we all can't get along. I mean, within any differences we see within each other, we can also find the similarities if we're willing to understand the differences first and then find the common ground.
Absolutely. Valerie Kaur, K-A-U-R, talks about, she wrote a beautiful book called See No Stranger. And one of the things she talks about is seeing opponents rather than enemies. And I think that's such an important shift to say, yeah, we're on opposite sides of this issue, and I'm gonna hold fast to my side because its values align for me or ethically align for me. And I can see your whole humanness, right? Mm-hmm. And I could have a meal with you, right? Like I could talk about our kids together, right? Mm-hmm. I could talk about what's important to us together and still hold this line where I believe this and you believe that, right? And I think that's, yeah, such a beautiful and important shift.
Yeah, I think it is too. And I think if we could do that, the world would be a better place, and the values would be more of tolerance, more of inclusivity and understanding.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So if I were to retain you as a coach, what can I reasonably expect from you? And what's that process going to look like?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that somebody is going to expect is lots of laughter, and probably more than they expect, and probably during some conversations that are heavy and hard. I think that laughter, well-placed laughter, can really enhance the joy and beauty in life and can break up the tension of approaching hard and scary topics. And so I often think of working with me as being a toggling back and forth in a lot of ways. One is between the 30,000 foot view, who are we as humans? What does it mean to each individual, the individual in front of me? What is their unique definition of a life well lived? Right. And then we come back to this next centimeter, to the immediate and to the next centimeter. Okay. What does that mean right now? And how does that help you decide how to be in your life right now? Right. How does it help you decide whatever challenging decisions are in front of you right now? Right. And then we're going to create little experiments. Okay. Well, if you tried this thing, how might that be more values aligned for you? And then once they run the experiment, we collect the data, we go back out to the 30,000 foot view. Okay. Now, what does this look like, right? Has this shifted at all? Are we heading toward it? Are we heading away from it? What does that tell us, right? As we get to play back and forth, and it is very co-creative and very collaborative in that way, right? And then we're also toggling through time because one of the distinguishing factors between coaching and therapy, and there's a lot of overlap these days, but one of the important distinguishing features is that when a person has a hardship or a trauma from their past that they really need to untangle, therapists have much better skill sets for that. So when I meet people who need that kind of work, and I deeply honor that, say, hey, let's find you. Let's find you an appropriate provider for that, right? But in coaching, we're gonna go to the past, right? We have to understand ourselves as whole humans. We have to look backward, and exactly as you did in the beginning of our conversation today, like what's influencing this moment right now? You know, how do we learn about this moment by looking at your past and how you've been in your past and how your past has influenced you? Okay, now let's bring that right here. How does that help us create the experiment that we're gonna do next, right? To get us into that future and toward that life well lived. You know, one of the ways that people who come to me distinguish whether I'm the right coach for them or not, whether they know they're doing it or not, is about how much structure they need. Because I have a lot of ideas. I've been coaching for 11 years now. I've gotten to work with well over 1,000 people. I lost count at some point. And so I've had this very rich coaching life. And I've gathered a lot of tools and perspectives and approaches along the way, but I'm very definitively not a blueprints person. I'm a thematic person, right? I think all of us could benefit from a deep dive into our values and getting very, very clear on what our core values are and what they look like in action in our lives, right? I think that's really important. I think it's really important for all of us to look at the parts of us that are, you know, we're all made up of lots of different parts, right? And some of our parts are really good decision makers, and a lot of our parts are not. And so I find it really helpful to distinguish, is this a good decision-making part? And if it's not, how do we nurture that part and utilize it for what it's good at, right? How it informs our lives and makes us a whole human without giving it the keys to the car, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, thematically, there are a lot of commonalities, but, you know, when people need a really rigid structure, this is how we're going to do it and on what timeline, they don't work with me. And that's great. There are a lot of really fantastic coaches who have much more structured routines. I like to be in the collaboration. I like to say, let's figure it out together. Let's take each step and figure it out from there.
Well, and time is relative in that point. And what I think you emphasize is I'm in this with you for the long haul, however long this is going to take to help you reach your goals. That's the amount of time we're going to take. So don't worry about a rigid timeline. And sometimes things don't work according to a very linear plan. Grief certainly isn't linear. And certainly life isn't linear. So, you know, we come to our own realizations, we come to our own conclusions, we reach our goals in our own time because we're all different.
Absolutely. And it's so true. You know, and occasionally a client will come in or somebody who's interested in coaching will come in and they'll say, I just have this one big decision I need to make, or I'm have this one big obstacle. And a lot of times we can sort that out in a one intensive session of like a 90 minute. Other people really want some partnership, right? And some of those people I work with for years. And you know, to your point, we have to look at each individual, right? Like, who are you? What do you need right now? I find that just so fulfilling, right? To meet each individual as just that, right? An individual.
Well, I liked in your bio too that you talked about really encouraging individuals, and I'm paraphrasing this, to look at the messy parts of themselves, because if we're going to really do the deep work, the deep internal work, it isn't just looking at the good parts of ourselves. We have to look at the messy. And looking at the messy is not always pretty, but when we look at it and when we see the gifts in the messy, that's some of the best work that we do, is to cultivate self-awareness and to become genuine. And I like the fact that, I think you mentioned earlier, is that we all mirror those qualities. We have all those qualities of, you know, the yin and yang within us that we mirror to each other. And because of that, we can become in service to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like that's one of the things, you know, going back to that question of influential experiences, when I was 18, I was at the end of a pretty rough relationship, and it ended with some pretty spectacular violence, like nearly life-taking violence. And ultimately, that's been such a helpful experience for me. Not that I would have ever wished it on my younger self, not that I would wish it on anybody. I wouldn't wish the experience on the ex who attacked me. Like, it just, it was a terrible experience for everybody involved. But the benefit, right? Like, what I've chosen to take away from it over lots of time and lots of healing and fantastic therapy and all of those things is, one, that we all have our hardships and we're going to be with them however we're going to be with them. Mm-hmm. Right. For example, for me, it's really important that I take the day off of work on the anniversary of that day every year, August 22nd. I, you know, just had my little anniversary and I take the day off of work and I check in with myself. Hey, what does this year feel like? Who am I this year? You know, what feels present to me about this experience this year? Is there anything I can continue to learn? It's been a lot of years. I was in 1996. 28 years later, I'm still learning about it. Right. And in that way, learning about myself. Right. And it's given me language for being with other people going through very hard things, even if what they're going through is so wildly different than what I experienced. Still, we humans have enough in common, to your point a moment ago, right? That even speaking the language of my trauma is speaking the language of their trauma, so long as I hold the space of them relating to their trauma mm-hmm. differently, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people don't hold on to the anniversary, right? I've met a lot of people who have sort of willfully forgotten what day that happened. Cool. That's a fine choice as well, right? We all have to figure out the ways that work for us. Learning about how to hold that space, learning that I can heal in that way, that I can forgive in that way, both myself and my ex, right? Has been a really helpful and enlivening experience. So again, while I would never have wished it on my younger self, I can embrace what there is, has been, and continues to be to learn from that really hard experience and how it helps me connect to other humans, which I just cherish. I cherish connecting to other humans.
Yeah, and I do too. And, you know, just as a result of my own traumas, with specifically with grief, I've used that to try to hold a compassionate space for others who have experienced, you know, grief, trauma, other types of loss not related to death. I was telling somebody, I was always a compassionate person, but now it's extended to people that I don't know. I look at body language now, and if I see somebody's like having a bad day, I just might hold the door open for them. And, you know, just something little, because even something like that can spur gratitude for somebody who's having even the worst day of their life. So I try to make sure that I do something nice for somebody I don't know, whenever the opportunity presents itself. And that gives me a lot of inner peace, and it gives me a lot of inner satisfaction, and I think makes the work that I do with others, you know, extremely meaningful.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that you do that. My wife often compliments me for my ability to compliment others. I have not only a skillfulness that I've developed, right? Skills are wonderful because we can learn them, mm-hmm. right? And so I've learned how to really compliment people in, I think, meaningful ways. And it's sort of like a game for me when I go out into the world, like who can I lift up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Who can I notice? Who can I, you know, through a simple compliment, say like, I see you and I see how you're showing up in the world and I'm appreciating you right now, right? Which is a resonant gift, right? Like, hopefully they feel a little better. I feel a little better. We feel a little connected. The world feels a little warmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, I'd like to see a world eventually, and I'm sure you probably have remember or followed or heard about the Great Conjunction of 2020, when I think the Mars and Jupiter came together to form the Christmas star. That hasn't happened in 450 years. And that union is going to signal a return to the age of Aquarius, where love, inclusivity, tolerance become the rule rather than, you know, just the exception. It's going to become more of a global phenomenon rather than just having certain areas in our country having pockets of that. And, you know, those type of transitions take time, but I'm hopeful, and particularly for the younger generation, that they're going to be the standard bearers for, you know, for those values. And I tell my students that all the time. You're the future. You are the hope that we have for a world that's going to be, you know, be based on those values. So, and I'll do anything I can to support that.
You know, same here. I had the good fortune to do some coaching at a local university, and which means I get to have conversations with these very young, very bright, mm-hmm. very thoughtful, compassionate human beings. And some of these conversations I didn't start having until my 30s. And there they are having these thoughts, you know, being so contemplative and introspective and so caring and so activated and mm-hmm. in really positive ways. And I get to help them shape that a little bit, right? And I find that so wildly inspiring. I also spend a lot of time these days thinking about the 1950s and 1960s and the civil rights movement during then. And that it was a time of really scary violence, right? There were a lot of political assassinations and violence and protests and, you know, just a lot of social change. And it really anchors me to sort of that greater arc of human history, right? I really do believe for a lot of reasons, exactly what you just said, right? Like that we're moving toward more collaborative, we're moving toward more peaceful, we're moving toward more loving, and that there's always a tension that arises, right? In the 1950s and 60s, a lot of the Confederate statues that are now coming down were erected, right? And it was a reaction to Black Americans fighting for their rights and gaining some, at least. And so to see the reactiveness now is scary to me. I certainly won't lie about that, right? Mm-hmm. It's a scary, uncomfortable time. And I see it as a natural part of sort of the discomfort of the growth process for humans. And I feel like you, I feel quite confident and optimistic that we'll move through this. And on the other side, we will be a even more peaceful and more generous species. So it's a wild time to live through, isn't it?
It is. And past history tends to repeat itself. If we don't make a conscious change or effort to change that, it is going to repeat itself. You can look at what's happening now, and you can go back, like you said, to any period in history and find a parallel. But it's up to us to change history, just like it's up to us to change the history of our ancestors, and particularly with intergenerational trauma. And I believe our history is inextricably woven into our DNA. And as coaches or therapists, it's up to us to help individuals try to change that history, honor their history, but yet change the narrative so that they can achieve their goals and they can look at their history from a different contextual perspective. So.
Yeah. And I think it's helpful, at least to me, to recognize that while we have repetitive patterns, it's been like this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right, we're fighting similar, you know, in some ways we're fighting similar battles as we did in the 1950s and 60s, but it's not exactly the same. It's here,
yeah.
You know, there's a movement forward and then the tension, and then we'll have a movement forward. We're in the midst of a movement forward.
I believe we are too. And, you know, it's going to take some time, but I believe, and I'm an eternal optimist, SB, I believe we're going to get there. So that's just my own personal feeling. So.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears for a minute. Tell our listeners about your weekly Substack, Death Plus Stuff. What inspired it? It just sounded like the word stuff I like, because I use stuff all the time, you know, in my subject lines for my emails. So I wanted you to address that a little bit for our listeners, if you would.
Yeah, thank you. Oh my gosh, I love this project. it just delights me. And I have a sort of a guiding philosophy to start with delighting myself and then expect and hope that it will be an invitation for other people to also be delighted. And it's gone pretty well for me in my life to approach that way. But death and stuff really, so a little backstory. In April of this year, my oldest and dearest friend, we have been friends for over 30 years, transitioned after 4 years, 4.5 years almost, of living with cancer. And I had been interested, my turn toward exploring death and dying mortality had started before her diagnosis, but certainly going through that journey with her, and I was intimately involved with it, and I'm really grateful for it. It was an intense and hard time, of course. And a deeply meaningful and important time in my life. And I'm grateful for every minute I got to spend with her in our 30 plus years, and in particular to get to traverse that really hard time with her. Something she and I were always uniquely able to do for one another was be in hard times together. In all honesty, we had different playmates. When we were going to go play, we went to other people. But when the rubber met the road and life was really challenging, we always came together and we're a really strong partnership in that way. And being in that process with her, especially in the last couple of years when we really had moved past the treatments that had minimal impact, she was really living her life pretty normally, relatively normally. And so it wasn't until the last couple of years that we really saw some saw the treatments getting really hard on her and her life starting to change as she moved through her transition. And it felt like at some point I had reached a vista and I was looking over this landscape, and I knew intellectually that it was the most common human landscape, this view at death and dying and grief. And yet, because of all the taboo around it, there was that part of me that was like, everybody, you got to come look at this. Like, come look at this view, And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I understand why so many people write memoirs about grief because they're also looking at this vista saying, hey, you got to come see this. Like, you're going to have to see it at some point anyway. Why not come look at it with me now? And so I'm a writer. I've always been a writer, and I've had a rather verbose Monday email for a very long time. And so I decided that, especially because of how challenging a lot of people find the subjects of death, dying, and grief, and mortality, I wanted to approach it differently. And I wanted to start with and utilize tiny little thoughts, little bite-sized perspectives, some of which very overtly look at death, dying, grief, and mortality. I'll sometimes put in just a fact about the carbon impact of cremation, for example, right? Or when a body decomposes without anything inhibiting it, if it's just wrapped in a shroud or and put in the earth or something, it creates what's called an island, a nutrient dense island that's made from both the decomposition of the organic material and also everything that the scavenging animals and insects bring into that space. So here we are with this verdant, beautiful little area, right? Made from this a decomposing body, right? So sometimes the posts are very overt like that and very sort of in your face. And sometimes they're much more subtle. So I'm big into cooking. I love to cook. I have a lot of my ethic is around where I buy my food and who I buy my food from and how I honor that food. Like, what a gift, right? That we get to eat and eat such beautiful things. And so on Mondays, I always have a reflection about cooking, right? Like, I had one that was about that there was a time before garlic existed, and there will be a time after garlic existed. And so is true with humanity, right? There was a time before Homo sapien, and there will be a time after Homo sapien, right? And in that way, we're in this inextricable web of interconnection and interdependence, right? In which we're all holding one another and we're all held. Mm-hmm. Right. And so my hope with death and stuff, one of my hopes with death and stuff is that it will help people feel that holding and feel that hell, right? And that it will help them approach the realities of mortality and death and grief
with a little more openness and a little more curiosity. But it also has a secondary mission. So its primary mission is to disrupt some of the taboos around death, dying, and grief, right? Its secondary mission is to disrupt some of the norms around access. So I love Dave coaching. I love it so much. I love that I get to do it every day. It feels perpetually new mm-hmm. to me, right? I always get to learn every single session. I learn something new. You know, I love every single one of my clients, like truly wholeheartedly. It's just such a gift. And the thing I don't like about coaching is that very frequently, most of the time, it's an advantage, and it is an advantage to get to see ourselves that way. But it's an advantage that goes to already advantaged people because it's a fairly expensive service, mm-hmm. right? It's not something everybody can afford, and that's not okay with me. And so my Substack is free to everybody. Nobody has to pay for it. And everybody gets the exact same content. But when people choose to pay for it, their money goes into a special bank account that's specifically for a scholarship fund. And then 4 times a year, I invite people to submit applications, and I accept applications in video format, audio format, and written format so that people with different comfort zones and abilities all have a chance to apply. And then the scholarship recipients get 6 coaching sessions. I do invite my scholarship recipients to contribute. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's, you know, $5 a session or $10 a session, and that's fine, right? The rest comes out of the scholarship fund, but they have a sense of contributing to their own growth and that, you know, making a financial contribution to their own growth, putting some skin in the game, mm-hmm. right? And then the scholarship balances it out, and then we get to disrupt that norm a little bit and get to play in a different arena. So death and stuff is, it's just been a really, really exciting, gratifying project. And I guess the last thing I'll say about it right now is just how wonderful as a writer it's been for me to move from my very wordy historic habits of writing and say, okay, how do I say this really concise? Right. How do I put, you know, it's almost like a haiku, right? Though I don't follow that format. How do I put a lot of meaning? How do I put a lot of thought provocation in just a few words? And which reminds me, I had one last week that was, it was actually sort of a throwback about a month after my friend transitioned. I had this day, I think about texting for 3 or 4 times a day. We just were a very text heavy friendship. And so, of course, as I moved through my day, I'd love to tell her about that. And so one of the posts was just the 4 things I thought about texting her that day. You know, I would have loved to have texted her something about her dog who we kept after she transitioned. And I would have loved to texted her a picture of my new sneakers that I kept saying, I have to buy new sneakers, but I didn't get to it until after she transitioned. You know, I would have loved to have sent her a yoga video because she inspired me to get back on my mat after I had dropped off on my practice. And I would have loved to have just texted her, I miss you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And those are those type of things that we want to do after somebody transitions is proof that relationships are ongoing long after the physical body dies. And I always quote this one teaching from Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom that Maury Schwartz said, death ends a life, not a relationship. And that in the 90s, that was profound, and it's profound now because it's very true. That's why I think the emphasis on moving through grief now is about maintaining connection through continued bonds with our loved ones, and in some ways through rituals as well too, that allow us to integrate the best parts of our transitioned loved ones into us and redefine our narrative moving forward. Now, speaking of rituals, I saw in one of your Substack posts that was rediscovering ritual, as I think it was on your blog or Substack, there was a line in that I wanted to read to you. It said, in the run-up to my friend's death earlier this month, I talked to a few people about forming a grief ritual. So my question for you is 2 parts. How can develop meaningful grief rituals help individuals navigate grief? And are there any suggested guidelines for determining which grief rituals or activities most align with our core values?
Oh, such beautiful questions. I was raised in a ritual-heavy culture. In Judaism, there's a ritual for everything. There's a prayer for everything. And unfortunately, and it's just sort of the nature of the Jewish day school I went to, I think, or perhaps just the interaction between me and that day school, I don't know. I felt like I was taught ritual in a performative way and not in a meaningful way. And so as a very, very young child, it just didn't feel right to me. And I distanced myself from, well, I never distanced myself from Judaism and the culture of it, but I did distance myself from the religion. And stop going to synagogue and those kinds of things. And so it's really been very recently in my life, through the lens of Buddhism, which I find fascinating, right? The Dalai Lama said to practice Buddhism isn't necessarily to become a better Buddhist, it's to become a better whatever you are. And it's certainly played out for me. And so through the lens of Buddhism, as I look back on the rituals of my that I was taught as a child, I thought, my goodness, there was such a beautiful invitation there to be present, right? To be mindfully present in each moment in our lives. You know, if we follow all of the rituals of Judaism, we would, you know, acknowledge each time we move through a doorway and say, oh, I get to go into this new space. How wonderful, right? We would just pause dozens of times in the day and go, oh, look, like I'm alive. Look at this. I get to do this thing, right? I get to wash my hands now. How beautiful is that? I love washing my hands, you know? And so it's really seeing ritual as a call to mindfulness, being deeply present in our lives, has really transformed everything for me. And so I've really been playing with ritual and learning about it. A friend was teasing me just last weekend because I was telling her about a ritual that I had done that I'd love to tell you about in just a second. And I said, it was my first ritual. And she said, you perform rituals all the time. I'm like, what do you mean? She said, well, when you do this and when you do that and when you do this, you're performing rituals. So I'm in a time of great learning about this. And what I'm learning is that, at least for me, the process of the ritual is far less important than the intention of the ritual and how that intention helps us get really grounded in the moment. So I'll give you two examples. One is that after my friend transitioned, I took her yoga mat. And as I said earlier, she inspired me to get back on my yoga mat after a break from my practice, a long break. And so every day when I get on her yoga mat, sometimes it's twice a day, you know, at the very end of the practice, I bow my head and I thank first my body for letting me do yoga. How cool. Like, good job, body. And then I thank her, right? And so once or twice a day, at least, and really it's far more than that, but once or twice a day, I say, hey, thanks. Like, you've just made such a beautiful impact in my life. Like, thank you for that, right? And so it's a tiny little ritual, right? But a couple of weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, I did sort of a bigger ritual with what I was calling like my first adult ritual. Look at me, I'm so grown up. The intention of that ritual was also about this friend, but it was about realizing, with some help from my wife and a really powerful energy worker, actually, that there was a part of me that was still waiting for her to transition. There was a part of me that was still sitting by her deathbed in this really anxious anticipation of her transition, and that part of me was ready to be in the present, right? And ready to say, like, no, this has happened, right? This really hard thing has already happened. And so I asked a few friends to join me, and my wife and I met up with them in this really beautiful picnic area surrounded by trees. And I said a little bit about my friend and about our friendship and about the purpose of the ritual. And then I spoke about each person who was there and why I invited them and how they helped me stay in this present, right? This very beautiful present life I get to live. And I used as our talking stick a ball of multicolored thread. And I held one end. And as each person spoke, because everybody had a chance to add a little bit. And as each person spoke, they passed the thread around. And at the end, there's this long strand of thread connecting us all. And I cut it off, and each person helped me tie it around my wrist. And so when I touch this tiny little knot over here, I have this reminder, it's like the present is now, right? Be here right now, right? The transition has happened. And I'm not, I was very clear in shaping this ritual, like the point to, you know, again, to echo what you said earlier, the point isn't to sever ties with Courtney. That will never happen. right? And the point isn't to end my grief. That will never happen either, right? It will be an experience that I continue to integrate into my life mm-hmm. in a variety of ways over time, right? Because she will always be my friend. She will always be important to yep. me, right? The point is to recognize exactly where I am and to be as fully alive as I can possibly be in this moment, right? And at times that's going to mean feeling very joyful and connected. I had a very funny experience just before our interview, before we started this conversation, where I was writing a little note and I said to my friend in this note, I said, "You don't get to decide how I grieve you." And at first I cried a little, "Oh, yeah, that's important that she understands that I get to choose this, right? This is my adventure to choose. She doesn't get to choose how I grieve her." And then it made me laugh because it made me feel like a naughty little kid, like, "You don't get to choose," you know? And that's living with grief, right? Like, mm-hmm. and that's being alive is this deep richness of experience, right?
Yeah, and even when we remember, you know, when we remember our loved ones and our friends and we have those yearnings for their physical presence, there's still beauty in that because that's another way that our pain allows us to remember. And we should never walk away from that. It's another way that mm-hmm. reminds us of the love that we shared with our transitioned loved ones. And it reminds us of the love that we still have right now. But yeah, those are some very powerful points about rituals. And I just, that struck me because I have developed what I would call certain continuing bond activities that connect me with my daughter. And I think any activity can develop into a ritual if you do it enough. But I think it's a very important process in terms of us integrating grief that we develop some activities or eventually rituals that allow us to integrate that. So,
yeah. And I do think that, you know, faith traditions can inform that. And mm-hmm. if a person has a faith tradition, wonderful, yeah. right? Go for it. But I think that to me, the important thing is not so much the origin of the ritual as the meaning, right? That it feels meaningful to the person, right?
Yeah, and rituals are going to be individualistic. They could be spiritually based. They could be faith-based. They could be a combination of both. But as long as it works for the individual, who are we to say it doesn't?
Amen.
One of my last questions for you today is, we're going to leave our listeners with just one thing, SB. What would that be?
You know, I sometimes like to quote the great philosopher and drag queen RuPaul. And I've actually learned a lot of spiritual stuff from RuPaul. She has quite a practice. But in her very funny show, RuPaul's Drag Race, whenever the contestants are supposed to start a challenge, she says, "Don't F it up." She doesn't say F, but I'm going to say F. Mm-hmm. She said, "Don't F it up." And so I have a sticky note that sits on my desk that says, "I get to be alive right now. Don't F it up." And that's what I'd like to share. That whatever you do, you know, like embrace the joy and the beauty and the gift that is being alive right now. Right. And if the richness of being alive right now is being sad and feeling heavy, okay, feel sad, be heavy. Mm-hmm. Right. And if it's embracing awe and looking up at the glory that is always present in watching the sky and seeing how light filters through trees or the incredible creativity of human architecture or whatever, right? Whatever evokes awe in all of us, like, let's engage with that actively because this life thing, it is a short and mysterious blip of an experience. Like, let's not miss it.
Yeah, just let the good moments as well as the bad moments soak us up. You know, just sit with it all because if we look hard enough, there's beauty in all of it.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
My last question for you today is, if people want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, find out more about you, what's the best way for them to do that, SB?
Oh, thank you. It's my website, Roz Coaching. So Roz is spelled like raw meat, R-A-W, and a Z at the end, because who doesn't love a Z? So RAWZcoaching.com. And from there, you can learn about me and my coaching. You can get a link to Death and Stuff. You can find it. Calendar for my weekly grief gatherings called Grief Nooks, which are just 15 silent minutes that are hosted by me and a variety of other people. We're always inviting people to come host. It's a starfish of an organization, not a spider. You know, we want to see it divide and grow and divide and grow. Yeah, it's all right there on that website. And I'd love to hear from anybody.
And I'll make sure all of that information gets in the program notes. So, SB, thank you so much for just a wonderful, engaging, and enlightening conversation today. I hope we can do this again in the future.
Me too. This has been such an honor, Dave. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for sharing space with me today. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.